Welcome to the Changemakers Podcast, produced by City Current and brought to you by Lipscomb and Pitts Insurance. This show shares personal stories and insight from those who are giving back and making a difference so we can learn and do the same. We cover life lessons, business advice, passion, and purpose. Now here's our host, the CEO of City Current, Jeremy Park.
Welcome to the Changemakers Podcast, our virtual version where we get to use technology to power the good. I'm your host, Jeremy Park. This is produced by City Current, and we talk about changemakers. It's awesome to be able to dive into the personal world of those who are making a difference, and we're honored to have with us Nick LaPara. He's out in Nashville, Tennessee, and he's got Let's Give a Damn. He's the founder of Let's Give a Damn, and that includes a podcast that he's popularly known for. And so, Nick, coming to us from Nashville, how are you doing, sir?
I'm fantastic, Jeremy. Thank you so much for the invite. Super stoked to be here.
Well, you're a good example of someone who's using your platform, using your power to make a difference, to inspire, to interview guests, and to go out even on your own. I know you're working on a book and consulting, and you do a lot. But let's get to know you a little bit. So on your end, you're a son of an immigrant. I know you kind of put that out there, but give us a little bit of just your childhood and where you grew up, and let's start there.
Yeah. So you mentioned son of an immigrant. My dad and his family moved here when they were younger from Guatemala. So they're born and raised in Guatemala. And when they moved here, it was as a result of, I mean, technically, they were refugees as well, because they moved here during civil war that was happening there. And they moved here precisely because of the violence and the unrest and uneasiness of living there. So they moved here and built a life here in New York State. So that's where I was born.
Did they know anybody moving there, or was it just like, we got to go and let's go?
Good question. They had, my dad had an uncle, kind of a second uncle, you know, still a relative, but not like in the immediate family. And that was really it. And so they moved to be closer to someone they knew and built a life. So it was mostly, I guess, generally speaking, didn't know anybody, but they knew someone enough to like be connected to, you know, they didn't, from not knowing where to go, they moved to Rochester, New York, right? So I was born there. I am one of 12 children.
Wow.
My parents, people ask, were they Catholic? And I said, no, I guess they were just bored. The plan was always, oddly enough, because I wouldn't, I have an interesting take on being part of 12, you know, kids, being part of one of,
Where are you in that lineup?
I'm the second oldest of 12 kids.
Okay.
And I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, but it was also like the greatest thing growing up because I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy is it's hard to raise 12 kids, right? And my two parents were not able to do that on their own. And so we kind of got thrust into, we all became kind of little parents of, you know, the older kids got to parent everything except for any discipline issues. We got to parent a younger version of ourselves. And so that just made for an interesting upbringing. But I love all of my siblings. We still get along. All 12 are alive and well. And we get along and we see each other multiple times a year. I live near a couple of them. So it's pretty interesting how things have worked out. But going back to New York, I was born there. And when I was a kid, my parents decided to move back to Guatemala, and for us the first time to be missionaries. So my parents were evangelical missionaries. And so when I was 9, we moved to Guatemala. And I spent 10 years there. And that took me through, you know, pretty formative years, 9 to 19. And most of my grade school there and left after high school to go jump out on my own. And so New York for the first few years, and then Guatemala. And we lived there during the last few years of that civil war that my dad left when he was younger. So it lasted, you know, several decades. And it was, I'm pretty sure if my dates are correct, 97, 98 is when the peace treaty was signed. And oddly enough, violence actually got worse after the civil war, for the first few years after the civil war, because you had all these people that had spent decades participating in this violence, and they didn't know where to go or what to do.
Right.
And so they tried to get jobs, tried to make a life for themselves and their families in the cities. And many of them went back to their violent ways because that's all they knew. And that's how they knew they could, you know, make a living and make money. So it was a very interesting upbringing growing up in, you know, this is pre 9/11, right? And so at that time, Guatemala was one of the most dangerous countries in the world. And growing up there was fascinating. I've got a, I won't bore everyone with the stories today, but I have a million stories of just things that we saw and experienced that most people listening probably have never been.
Well, and those end up changing you forever. Obviously, they change your perspective, the way you view people, the way you view situations, your priorities. I mean, all of that tends to completely shape who you are. And whether you realize it or not, you internalize it.
Yeah. I mean, I just tweeted this morning, right? This kind of random, you know, off the cuff statement about, you know, I am a hugger. I love hugging. I mean, I hug strangers and friends alike. If you meet me for the first time, you're probably going to get a hug unless you let me know with your body language that you don't want one. but, you know, and I'm a very affectionate person. A lot of that did come from, and I'm just giving one example, you know, growing up, because everything was so violent, there was a lot of unrest and uneasiness about being out in public and going from point A to point B because you didn't know what was going to happen on the way to point B, right? Mm. And so we always grew up, no matter what you're feeling or how you feel about that person, or if you just had a fight, or if you're not getting along, or if you are getting along, when you leave the home, you give a proper goodbye. You say goodbye, you say, I love you, you give a hug. And that doesn't matter if you're going to the corner store, if you're going, if I'm going to the mall, if I'm going grocery shopping, it doesn't matter what you're doing. This very well could be your last time seeing this person.
Wow.
So don't leave on a bad note. And that is one example of a thousand growing up in that type of an environment that did very much shape my worldview and my outlook on life. So yes, very much so. I grew up with a very non-traditional upbringing, right? 11 siblings, homeschooled for most of the time. Having the first few years of growing up in a country where you don't understand the language or the culture,
right?
All of that deeply shaped how I look at, people, my empathy level, conversations around immigration and refugees. It shaped all of those things growing up in a place where, at least for the time that we lived there, there was a lot of unrest, but just amazing people, beautiful culture, beautiful people. I mean, talk about resilience, you know? People that still have this amazing, you know, electric love for life in the midst of, you know, living in a virtual war zone, right? Like that's something unique that, again, a lot of people don't ever get to experience. But once you're in it, you realize like there's different parts of our humanity that come out when we know that we're literally fighting for our lives. Yeah. And how are you going to treat your neighbor? How are you going to take care of your neighbor? Those sorts of things. So yeah.
Give us one favorite or just a family tradition that stands out for you. And it could be growing up or it could be one that is still today.
Yeah. Good question. I think a lot of families probably have something similar, but we pretty religiously had a family night every Friday evening. And that was special, again, because for the first few years, we didn't have lots of friends. We didn't have lots of people around that we knew. It took us a while to get involved in our community. So we were truly all that we had for several years. And so getting that time together that wasn't school, that wasn't, you know, going out and playing soccer, that wasn't running errands, that wasn't helping our parents with their work, you know, starting churches. It was truly a time of just like rest. And obviously what kid doesn't love, you know, pizza and a movie. That was kind of our traditional way of doing that. And so we still have some version of that today in my family where,
nice.
You know, I'm a busy guy. I travel not so much anymore because of this current pandemic, but I I travel a ton. I'm not home a lot. And my family, they're so gracious to, you know, put up with the work that I've chosen to do. And not just that, but they're very, very supportive, my wife and my kids. So that time is sort of religious also still today. And we invite some other friends and neighbors into that from time to time. But that is a time that our kids look forward to even today. So yeah, it is something that
carries forward
going on for 30 years. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's cool because, I mean, you take your family traditions and you make them obviously your own, and then those carry forward with your children as well. And so talk about, because you mentioned obviously traveling a lot, but give listeners an idea and viewers obviously of what you do with Let's Give a Damn, because obviously we mentioned the podcast, but it's so much more than that. So describe everything you do with Let's Give a Damn.
Yeah, let me try to give some framework for the work that I've done that has led into the work that I'm doing. So my first career was 14 years in the nonprofit space. In this country and other countries. So I did a lot of traveling during those 14 years. And it was a lot of stuff. It was mostly in the religious space, but we did tons of projects from orphan work to, you know, water projects and everything in between. We did a ton of amazing work. I'm very grateful and honored to have been part of that work for so long. Toward the end of my first career, I was starting to feel an unrest in my soul. And that unrest was, I needed something different, something that wasn't always beg, borrow, and steal, which is so much of the nonprofit world. And I love the nonprofit world. I think there's a need for it in so many ways still. There are so many nonprofits that still need, should exist and need to exist, and we need to support them with everything that we can. Totally believe that. There's no, me leaving the nonprofit world wasn't me turning my back on her. It was me just saying, I wanted to, 4 years ago, I decided I want to explore, along with many others, this is not a novel idea, but I wanted to explore what's the intersection of business and creating things that make money so that we can do a lot of good in the world, right? Social enterprise, conscious capitalism, there's plenty of words for it, right? There's plenty of titles for it.
Yep.
But I wanted to get into that space because I believed that that was a better use of my time and skill set for the foreseeable future. And so 4 years, I jumped out of that. We moved from Tacoma, Washington at that point, just south of Seattle, to Nashville, Tennessee. And we left there, Jeremy, with, I had a nonprofit job. So when I say some money in our savings, it literally was some money in our savings, but left there with some money in our savings and a dream. And we've always been pretty risk-taking people. And so that didn't scare me at all, you know, but we just jumped out, left, and didn't know what we were going to do. But I just knew that I wanted to put everything I had learned over the past 14, 15 years to work in this new space and on these new ideas. And so at that point, I didn't know what I wanted to do, how I wanted to do it. And so kind of podcasting was having this like revival. You know, it was alive for so many years in the early 2000s, right? And then it kind of like died down. And back then there were audio podcasts, video podcasts, the whole thing. And then it sort of died down, and then it had this like big boom 4 or 5 years ago. And so I was a big podcast listener, 30, 40 episodes a week, really diving into it, doing a lot of my learning and processing in the podcast space. And I figured I can do this. It's a pretty like easy way to, I can talk. I like to ask questions. I like to figure out the best and good questions to ask. So let me find people that I know, people that I don't know, go after them and start. Essentially, the original idea with Let's Give a Damn was, and it still is that in a way, is find people who saw something wrong in the world and gave a damn about it, pull out the nuggets there, pull out the gold, figure out how to process through their journey and the questions they asked, the questions they didn't ask, did they wait for permission or did they go after it, and then tell those stories. And so I was very lucky early on in that process. I had a pretty robust network already, but it was mostly in the nonprofit space. And so branching out, I had to do some hard work to like establish relationships and grow those relationships and foster those relationships. I started out with some really good friends of mine, Jeremy Cowart and others. And then one of my friends introduced me to, I interviewed my friend Gol Reese, who helped start Soul Pancake, an entertainment company out in LA, digital entertainment. And she introduced me to one of the other co-founders, Rainn Wilson. And many of you might know that name from The Office. Dwight Schrute is his character. And Dwight, I just call him Dwight. Rainn Wilson and his wife, Holiday, they have a nonprofit in Haiti called Lide Haiti, an amazing nonprofit. Many of you should check it out. So he agreed to be on my podcast to talk about the work they're doing as in his career, but also as Damn Givers. And so I flew out to LA, had him on the show. And that kind of opened up other doors for me naturally. And I'm still grateful today. Rainn and I keep in touch. We do some stuff now and again together. And I owe a lot of what's happened to him, episode 10 of my podcast, this no-name guy from Nashville. to be on my show. And things have sort of taken off from there. We've built this social media online community that we're figuring out what to do with next, how to help them best. And so we have the podcast. We're 135 episodes in. I also do social impact consulting, helping companies figure out how to measure their social impact well so that it benefits what they make, the people they work with, the clients they serve, everybody involved in the process, right? And so we go in and we conduct audits on everything that they do, who they are, how they make what they make, all of that stuff. And then we put a plan in place for them, how they can be holistically a give a damn organization. Yeah. I also speak and I'm working on my first book. And I'm working on a TV show right now. Been working on TV show ideas for a couple of years. If any of you listening, or maybe you, Jeremy, if you've worked on TV shows, then you know that it's not a, oh, that's a great idea, and then it becomes a real thing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
No, there are
a lot of work.
A million people with great ideas, right? I used to call myself an ideas person, and I do have good ideas. I've created a lot of, thankfully, I've been able to create some really cool stuff and foster really great communities. But ideas are nothing without execution, right? So yeah. There's a million people walking around saying, I'm a great ideas guy. I mean, how many times, this is kind of not a thing anymore, but you know, 2-3 years ago, everybody had a new app idea, right? Yep. And I was like, I don't care about your app idea. Can you execute on that idea? Can you make that a reality? And that's what kind of sets idea people apart from execution people. And so,
yeah, there was a guy that told me, and I'm not getting exactly right, but he basically said the same thing. He's like, look, ideas, dime a dozen. He's like, I've got 10,000 of them. Everybody does. He's like, I want to see what you can actually do with it and create something special, and then I'll help you out. So to your point.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, exactly. And one of the bigger things we're working on too, Jeremy, right now is we are figuring out how to take what we've created in the digital sphere and bring it to people. And so a few months ago, I started having more and more people come to me and say, okay, we love being a part of the podcast, the Let's Give a Damn family. That's what we call it, the Let's Give a Damn family. And you know, they're engaging in many different ways, but they said, we want to start doing something in our community. And we kind of want to wave the Let's Give a Damn banner as we're doing it. And so not sure if you or your audience are familiar with Creative Mornings, but we're working on something similar to that, like bringing Let's Give a Damn to different communities, large and small, all over the US and all over the world. And so we have 13 to 15 cities right now that are ready to go. I have been, actually, the tornado that came through Nashville a few weeks ago, oddly enough, was a great time for me to start working out how this works, how to gather people around an idea and not control them, give them tons of freedom to be who they are, but also help them. Because people are looking for, unfortunately, not a lot of people realize what you and me and many others realize, that you don't have to wait for permission, right?
Exactly.
You just go and do. There are no gatekeepers when it comes to giving a damn. Like, you have to just, if you have, you know, and we just talked about it before, the ideas versus execution, it's the same idea. No one's coming to save you, and no one is going to give you permission to build community, give a damn, fill in the blank, right?
Yep.
You just have to, if you feel it's something you need to do and you have to do, just go do it. And so,
and that's actually where you find your purpose. I think that's the thing. People think that purpose is going to magically find them by going out and raising your hand to say, I want to be a part of the solution. That's how you find your purpose. And that's also too, where you fill your cup with your energy, your compassion, your empathy. That's where you grow as a person. And to your point, I mean, I think everything you're touching on is something that we see firsthand as well, is that when you inspire through media, especially through a podcast, through stories, people then get that energy, but then they want to do something with it. They want to do something physical with it. And that's where, you know, finding ways, like you said, of giving them the freedom and the flexibility, arming them and empowering them with the ability to then go create the change themselves, to go serve themselves, to find their purpose themselves. That's the real power then of creating that action mechanism that then fuels in a whole new way everything you're doing.
Yeah, totally agree. And I saw that. I mean, I've seen that many times in my career, especially the last 3 years with Let's Give a Damn. But I saw that on full display with the tornado. You know, I had a ton of people. The first stop I made on March 3, the morning the tornado came through, was a friend of mine, Josh Mundy, here in Nashville. His building was all over the news, was one of the main buildings they were showing that was in the path.
Right.
Because it was home to Music City Cleaners and the lab and a couple other businesses. So all of his businesses, brick and mortar, that needed a place to stay were in that building, and it was demolished. And so I went there and, you know, talked with him and talked with others. And I started getting all the, you know, it's like 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, just a few hours after the tornado happened, I started getting messages, you know, text messages, emails, phone calls, direct messages on all the social media platforms saying, hey, I know you're out there. What can I do? What can we do? And so, you know, I put together a WhatsApp group. That's something anybody can do, right? I just downloaded WhatsApp. I don't usually use that, but I downloaded it. I know it's a great place to put people together and, you know, people can share ideas and photos and videos. And it's kind of a great free tool that we have. And so I downloaded that, put a bunch, you know, started adding people to it. And, you know, then I went to North Nashville later that day, which is where, you know, an under-resourced community in Nashville that doesn't get a lot of attention usually. It's not as sexy and as out there as some other neighborhoods in Nashville. But they got pummeled. I mean, they got pummeled. I walked around and just was like, just couldn't. I mean, the tears and the kind of like the heaving of my soul and my heart, like just came, you know. And there was just so much destruction, trees on every and every home. And again, people were, you know, we walk into this neighborhood and people were asking, what do we do? Like, how do we know what to do? And I just looked at them and said, there's no rule book for this. Nobody writes a rule book for when a tornado rips through your city. We just got to start doing. See that house over there? There are 4 trees on that home. We've got to get the trees off the home. We've got to start cutting limbs. Oh, we don't have a chainsaw? Let's go get a chainsaw. We don't have this? Let's go get that. And obviously, as the hours and days went by, people started getting more organized. But that first day taught me so much about how people want to help, but don't know how to help and don't know how to do it.
Yeah. And they need structure and guidance. And that's where the leadership comes in. Yeah.
100%. But I think, and I totally agree with you. And I also think that that many people on that day learned that they were a little bit of that leader. Maybe not the, you know, it takes years of experience and trial and hardship. People aren't born leaders. They might have some of those qualities in them to take charge. But leadership is something that not everybody should covet and want because it's hard. And now you're up front and people are looking to you and you have to own so much of what happens, right? But I saw sparks of leadership. I saw people, you know, once I said, there's no rule book, just go and do it. Then later on, I started seeing those people, they just went off. I thought I would have to kind of not babysit them, but also like watch them throughout that day. I mean, it's just power lines down everywhere. And all of a sudden they're gone. And they were off leading their own groups. They were off saying, you know, they're off pointing people like, hey, we got to clean this up and move these logs and do this and do that. And so, yes, people need structure. People need someone to point them in the right direction. But then I did start to see some of those people, not all of them. Some people still needed to and wanted to follow. But so many of them, like I saw a spark of leadership. Yeah. Hopefully 3 weeks later, they're responding accordingly to that, what they felt in themselves that day.
Well, even like you said before, you know, on the war-torn side, within chaos, there's beauty. And within disruption, there are moments of tenderness. And so once again, you're able to be a part of, but also to see that in the devastation of a tornado and the need of helping neighbors, that people do want to come out and they will. And although they might need a little bit of a nudge at first, all of a sudden, then you get to see that magic take fold. And to your point, that creates that ripple effect that they then, with their own lives, will take even more control and have more of a desire to go out there and make a greater difference. Because to your point before, it's easy. All you have to do is raise your hand. People Yep. want and they need help, and they're searching for others to join alongside them. And if you're the person that's going to raise their hand, and actually, I mean, even to your point with Rain, I'm a big believer myself too, in that if you want to meet anybody and work with anybody in the world, it's possible, especially now with technology.
Yep.
Because all of those people have something in them community driven that they're passionate about. They all have something that's their legacy, that they want to make a difference in this life. They've, you know, whether they've achieved something or not, that we, you know, put them on a pedestal, they want to do something that's more powerful than themselves to make a difference in this world. And if you can figure out what that passion is and you can align with that, you have a chance of working with them and doing amazing things. And that's where, you know, just like your story, everything just takes off. And it's because you're putting somebody else before you. You're putting community before you, and you're diving in with an open heart saying, I just want to make a difference. I'm going to use my platform. But by doing that, you connect with amazing people that then put you on a whole different trajectory. And I think that's where, for us, we always encourage, like, if you want to feel a part of the community, if you want to do something special, but also if you want to grow personally, professionally, spiritually, serve. Go out and volunteer. Go get involved in your community. That's where everything happens. If you're stuck within your house, like unfortunately all of us are right now, but it's obviously to make sure that everybody's health and safety is first and foremost, it becomes harder. But we can still do things virtually and we can still connect. But once this goes away and we have the chance to reconnect physically and, you know, we can hug each other and do those things, then once again, we have a chance to really profoundly impact not only our community, but ourselves in the process.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I really couldn't agree more. I'm so glad that we are on the same wavelength there. I want to see, and this is, I think you're spot on regarding this time that we have right now. We're all self-quarantining, self-isolating, socially distancing. I'm a people person, like off the charts.
I am too.
I want to be with people from sun up till sundown. There was a few weeks ago, I can't even imagine how I'm going to feel coming out of this. It's going to feel like I've been reborn. You know, a few months ago, I got sick and was down and out for a week and a half or so. This is before the end of the year. And when I finally got out, and I lined up a whole meeting or a whole day of meetings, right? After when I was finally out. And I came home and my wife could visibly see that I was a different person from when I left the home, just kind of feeling, I'm a pretty excited, passionate person overall, but you know, I left pretty like in a dreary state of mind, physically and emotionally, I have all the leaves. And when I came back, she could just see the life was back in me. Now we're going to see what that looks like after, you know, months and months of being at home and being away from people and keeping our distance. I am so thrilled for what people are creating right now. I mean, I'm seeing a beautiful things being created. I'm seeing us connect in ways we've never connected with before. I'm seeing people feel different things about others that they haven't felt before. But what we're able to create once we're out, I hope that things are never the same. I really do. I hope that things are never the same. One of the areas that this is sort of off topic, but sort of on topic, what we were just talking about. Right now, one of our main things that my family and I care about is the climate, the environment. Mm-hmm. We take it very seriously on multiple levels. We're teaching our kids, we're teaching them the importance of, okay, everybody says go recycle. And it's like, but what if we just use a lot less, right? What happens when we compost? Like recycle is the last thing that we should be doing, because most of that recycling ends up in the landfill anyway, because we can't process all the recycling. We're just making too much crap, right? We're making too many products that aren't sustainable, right? So we're doing all these things in our home, composting, planting things, and showing our kids all these things. But it's there's a lot of conversations about the climate happening, right? And nobody's listening. I shouldn't say nobody, but the vast majority of people aren't listening. We're telling people things are going to happen. Things are happening and going to happen to our earth, to our environment. And it's happening at a much rapid pace than ever before. And again, as people just go about their days, right? Now, one of the things I'm most hopeful for about this time is climate scientists and climate analysts are able to, they're going to be able to collect data. They're going to be able to collect ideas and clear data and facts about what's happening, right? I saw this video the other day of this canal in Venice. I think it was Venice, somewhere in Italy. And because they're in virtual, you know, shelter in place lockdown right now, because things are so bad there. There was this one canal where they could see straight to the bottom for the first time in forever. And fish were returning to the canal, a canal once just heavily populated by people and boats and stuff. And they saw geese come back, right? And they said, we haven't seen geese here in years, like so many years. Fish in clear water and geese haven't, we haven't seen this because people, because things, because stuff. And I heard stories from Wuhan, where so much of this originated, right? The city was quarantined for so long. And people were telling stories of they could hear the birds again. Birds were coming back, right? And I did see this heat map the other day over China, where it showed in January and February, when the city was, when this country was pretty much on lockdown, how the pollution drastically dropped. And now in March, right, the cases have been going down. So people are letting their guard down. They're going out and about again. They're going back to work a little bit by little bit. And you could visibly see the heat map, the pollution rise again. And they've talked about that already with New York and LA, where the pollution has drastically dropped in New York. And I hope that one of the results of this time is that we become more conscious, right? Mother Nature is getting a breather for the first time in a long time. There are millions of cars not on the road. There are, and again, there are negative effects of what's happening. I don't wish this on anybody, but what if it took something like this for us to take seriously this conversation about, hey, we have one home, people. We have one earth. We have one place to live. There is no, you know, people make the joke, there's no planet B, there's no plan B. Like, we need to take this seriously. And now we're going to be able to, with data and with facts, like, show people, hey, when we chill out a little bit, when we slow down a little bit, this is what happens to our earth, right? And so I think in this way and in so many ways, I hope this time that is not, again, I don't wish this on anyone. Like, I'm not a happy camper right now.
Right.
At home all the time.
Well, but I think what you're talking about too, though, is a better sense of balance, right? And so the fact that already Mother Nature shows you that by not being in the canals, all of a sudden the fish come back and the birds and the geese, that shows you that nature is quick to heal.
Yeah.
But we have to have better balance in our lives. And so if we're so consumed, on one side, and you know, Tom Shadyac, who's a producer, director of Bruce Almighty and Liar Liar, Ace Ventura, he's a big Hollywood guy that shifted gears dramatically and has become a massive philanthropist. But he talks about the only thing that continues to consume is cancer. And when you look at nature, like a tree, it only takes as much nutrients, as much water as it needs, and then it returns the rest. And so it's all about taking what you need, which isn't everything that we think, it's just enough that we need. And you can still have nice things. It's not, that's not out of the ordinary, but take what you need and then give the rest out. And and finding balance, to me, I agree, is it goes back to perspective. If we have a better perspective and we step back and look at what are we doing that in many cases is harming ourselves, let's step back and look at, okay, let's find a better balance point so that we can all, one, coexist, but two, like you said, take care of our planet.
Yeah, on that note, I love that take what you need and don't take, and you need much less than you think that you do.
Right.
I gave a TEDx talk in Chicago 3 years ago on what I call the simple life. And the simple life is my just version of minimalism. So when we left Tacoma, Washington, I mentioned at the beginning, we moved. When we moved, we sold everything that we owned except for what we could fit in the back of our Honda Odyssey minivan. And so my wife and I, three kids and my brother, everything we owned in the back of that minivan, we sold or gave away everything else. I didn't own a thing in the world outside of those things. And so we, you know, my wife and kids flew here. We, my brother and I drove. And part of the story is that we didn't actually move to Nashville for a year and a half. So we moved here, but then decided not to move here. And so we vagabonded for a year and a half, you know, stayed with family, stayed with friends, and you know, I can do my work from anywhere, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do anyway. And so we just kind of floated around. About 3 months into that time, I realized that because everything, all of my stuff was in a one duffel bag and a backpack. So my backpack was my laptop and, you know, all my stuff for work. And then my duffel bag was clothes and shoes and toiletries and everything. It was everything. That's all I owned in the world. And I realized 2-3 months in, yo, I haven't needed anything outside of these things. And so I challenged myself at that moment. And again, it resulted in something that's still going on today, which was, you don't need anything. You don't need anything. And so I drastically reduced, you know, my wardrobe. I wear only this. So this, if you're listening to this, you can't see it. I have like this knit sweater on that a buddy of mine gave me years ago. That's the only jacket I own. And it's a sweater. I don't even have like a jacket, which is some, every once in a while, I wish I had a jacket, but I don't need it. I don't need it. I put a long sleeve tee on underneath and I'm good. But I have two pairs of jeans, six t-shirts, two long sleeve t-shirts, three pairs of shoes. And that's it. And that's all that I have to wear. And I don't need anything outside of that. I kind of made a
uniform. It makes it really easy to pick what you're going to wear for the day, huh?
It makes it extremely easy because it's
but there are people that they have like the same, what that is it, Mark Zuckerberg or whatever, like he famously wears the same shirt over and over again just because yep. he doesn't want to spend money on it, but also too, like it makes it really easy. He doesn't have to waste any energy on what do I wear during the day.
Well, yeah, no, I'm totally up. Yeah. Steve Jobs had his version of that. Zuckerberg has his version. And there's a lot of people that have taken this on. It's not unique to me. Like I'm not the first person to pioneer this, but I found out for myself that I just don't need a lot of things. Yeah. And what that's freed me up to, you know, when we moved here, we got rid of the minivan. We got a Toyota, we got a Prius, right? It's great. Great for the environment. I have three kids. People are like, how do you fit three kids in your Prius? It's easy. You just fit them in there. Like there's three seats in the back. You tell them this is what our vehicle is.
Yeah, they don't know any better.
They don't know any better. They acclimate, right? And so, you know, and what about when you need two cars? Well, if I need the once a week when we have this conflict in our schedule, I can usually walk, hitch a ride, or get a lift. Like I'm not going to get a second car that comes with second insurance. And if I have a second car, I'll use a second car more versus getting creative about these things, right? When we moved here, we moved into a 900 square foot little home, right? And when I tell people that I have three kids in a 900 square foot home, they're like, how do you do that? What does that look like? And it's like, again,
well, if you've ever lived in Los Angeles or New York or places like that, that's totally normal.
100%.
Like, man, you got a mansion.
Right. And so exactly. And so there's already millions of people living this way.
Right.
Hundreds of millions around the world, really, if you count in the rest of the world. It's like, it's not that hard. You just creatively use your spaces. Yeah. Like I'm in my office right now in my bedroom. And that's
but you're also picking what's the priority for you, right? And
yeah.
In many cases, people prioritize the money and the things over the relationships and the difference and the happiness. And I think we do get caught in that trap of thinking that the more I have, the more happy I'm going to be.
Yep.
And, you know, I've seen it firsthand in my life, especially living in Los Angeles. That's not the case.
Yeah.
And in many cases, the more you have just creates more stress and more problems. And it becomes a vicious cycle that it's hard to get out of. And you're always trying to keep up with the Joneses and you're never really content. And so to your point, realizing, okay, what makes me happy? It's not these things. It's the ability to go and create relationships, to hug people and have friends and get too excited and knock these things over. But it's the relationships and the difference you can make. And I think that's where prioritizing what's important, the relationships over the things, really sets you on a different path so that you can, one, you know, continue and find your purpose and be strong in that purpose, but also two, set an example for your family and your kids and for others to say, look, these are the things that I believe in that are important. I'm living it with my actions. And now I'm able to make this sort of a difference because of those choices that I'm making versus spending them on things that might fulfill me, but they're not going to help you.
Most people don't ever slow down long enough to self-audit.
Yeah.
Right? Part of the reason people try so hard to keep up with the Joneses and think that's the way to be, or, you know, accumulating stuff or things or money or whatever. I mean, the data's out there, dude. Like one penny over $80,000 a year, there's no happiness after that. No more happiness, right? Because 80,000, you can live almost that. You can get your basic needs met almost anywhere in the world, right? And so if you have 80,000 or 80 million, you are not one iota happier if you have 80 million than the guy who has 80,000. I'm not saying don't make money. Like I think people should, if in an ethical people over profit kind of way, make as much money as you can, because money pays for helping other people and doing good in the world.
Right.
But just know that you're no happier than the guy down the street that only makes 80. Right. And but people don't quiet themselves enough. They don't know, they're scared to quiet down long enough to really do that introspective deep dive to figure out, why do I want more things? Why do I think that I need more things? And am I scared of what people are going to think if I rid myself of all this stuff? You know, I've actually found more people that I found way more people that are like, I've literally heard hundreds of people say, I wish I could do what you're doing, but I can't. And if I know the person well enough, I will push back on them and say, you don't want to. Like, I love you no matter what you do. Like, I love you. Nothing changed. But don't say you can't. You just don't want to. If I don't know them well enough, then I wish them that knowledge. I wish them the ability to say, no, I'm just not willing to change that right now. But it's not because I can't. Every one of us can do that.
Goes back to intentionality, being intentional with your actions. And to your point, then saying, okay, the best way to do it is to start it right now.
Yep.
And action creates clarity. So give us, we'll switch here in a second to a lightning round, which is just short questions, short answers, but give us maybe one just favorite bit of advice for those. I mean, kind of on this same thread of following your dreams, following your passions, wanting to make a difference. I mean, obviously we've talked and kind of shared a few throughout this conversation, but give us one of your favorite tips or bits of advice for others in terms of following your dreams and doing everything you're doing and just being intentional about it.
Think about death every single day. The wisest, the most calculated, the people that I think get the best and most work done are those that think about death often. And this is goes back to Stoicism, right? I think, you know, I am a Christian. That is my faith background, but I think Stoicism and Christianity actually work hand in hand because there's a sobriety about life. And I think there's not enough sobriety about the reality of death being maybe 50 years away, but maybe 5 minutes away, right? And if you think about death often on a daily basis and not in a morose way, because I'm not scared of death. We shouldn't be scared of death. It's a part of life. Life will go on without us. If you're scared that what's going to happen to my family and the world once I'm gone, yes, there'll be sadness and there will be grief and all of that, but life goes on. You're not that important. That's just the reality of it. We are one. You are an infinitely valuable human and you're not that important, right? And so thinking about death often is so key. And it goes back to, you know, this Stoic idea of memento mori, remember death or remember you will die. These Roman generals, history tells us that these Roman generals would come back from battle victorious. They had just won this incredible battle and they're going through the streets and there's parades praising them. And history tells us that these Roman generals, these big, awesome, burly, strong, badass dudes, as they were riding through the streets, they would have servants whispering in their ear, memento mori, memento mori. Remember you will die. Remember you will die. And that brought them down. They had the wherewithal, they had the self-awareness enough to know, okay, right now in this moment, it feels kind of good to be praised for this amazing battle. We just risked our lives and we just conquered the enemy. But they had the wherewithal to have someone whispering in their ear and reminding them, hey, you're not that important and someday you're going to die. So every action, everything you do, everything you eat, everything you drink, everything you own, everything you do for others, everything you do for yourself has to run through this grid, this filter of, remember, you're going to die. And that has the opposite effect. Again, people every once in a while are like, whoa, dude, like chill out. Like, why are you so like morose about this? And I'm like, no, no, no. It actually gives me more life. Because if I wake up and say, hey, today could be my last day, that doesn't plummet my emotions. That actually gives them, that actually
gives an urgency.
Oh, yeah. So now I'm excited about hanging out with my kids. I'm excited about, you know, making sure my wife is taken care of and everything's good. I'm excited about helping other people. I'm excited about creating things and not waiting for permission, right? People are always like, how do you do all this stuff? Well, I don't wait around for permission. And we've already talked about that. Like, what causes me to not wait for permission? Because there are no gatekeepers. And if this is my last day, I want to go out with a bang. And we see these examples every single day. We're seeing them now. Right? People that are in, you know, at the beginning of this COVID-19 thing, we were told, you know, oh, if you're in my age range, which is 36, you're good. Like the chance that you're going to get this and then die from it is almost nothing. Well, now we're seeing that's not true. We're seeing younger people get this at a higher rate because they weren't taking this seriously enough. And then some of them are actually dying. I mean, just recently, just yesterday, the first child that contracted COVID-19 died. We had our first child die from this, 11 years old.
Wow.
Okay, people, life is short. In the book of James, in the Bible, it describes it as life as a vapor. Like go brew yourself a cup of tea, put the kettle on, watch the vapor come out, see how quickly it disappears. That in the grand scheme of history, the millions of years that the civilization or that world's been around in the hundreds of thousands of years that humans have been around, that's all you are is a vapor. And so that's my advice to myself every single day. And that's the first thing I usually like turn to when asking to like help other people is I think your life will drastically change if you think, remember death, remember you will die. And then I think everything changes.
Yeah, I definitely, I agree 100%. Let's switch over. This is a lightning round. So it's short questions, short answers, just a fun chance to get to know you better. You are an avid reader. So give us a recent book you've read.
Yeah, so I have recently read Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss. I've reread that book. So if you know who Tim Ferriss is, I don't actually listen to, sorry, Tim, I don't listen to his podcast all that much. I can't deal with so much of the conversations that is happening. It just isn't interesting to me on there. But in book form, so he's done hundreds and hundreds of interviews. And in Tools of Titans and Tribe of Mentors, two books that he wrote, he took all these like 100 interviews per book and condensed them down to 4 or 5 pages. And so there's short chapters. And I love to read. And so I have no problem sitting down for 2-3 hours and reading if I need to and want to. But things are crazy and I have 3 kids and things are going on. So the fact that I can sit down and read 2 or 3 chapters, 15 pages, and get all this gold from, maybe a swimmer and then an architect and then an entrepreneur, like
bounce all over the place. Sitting, yeah,
man, it just feeds my soul. And so, I love that. That's a recent book that I've reread and really enjoyed.
What do you like to do to relax?
My favorite way to relax is coffee and a cigar. And so cigar smoking is, if you want to call it a vice, it's my only vice. I don't drink too much. I don't do anything too much. I love cigars. I have extreme, I'm an Enneagram 8. So I'm a disruptor, an agitator. We can be really annoying at times if we're not healthy. And I work very hard to be on the healthy side. But cigars and coffee just calm every part of me, mentally, physically, emotionally. I can take that hour. I can drink. I can smoke. I can talk with people or not talk with people, listen to a podcast or just in total silence. And I come out a completely different person.
Give us, for those who have not been to Nashville or like to explore Nashville, give us one of your favorite or a couple of your favorite spots. And they can be restaurants or just venues. Where do you like to go in Nashville?
Yeah, so I love coffee and I love really good food. Sunflower Cafe in Nashville, Tennessee. It's a vegan. I'm in Nashville, people. So there's an abundance of hot chicken and meat everywhere and barbecue. But there are a couple. My family and I are vegetarian, heading toward veganism. And Sunflower Cafe is an amazing vegan spot. Great, great food, cafeteria style. You will not be disappointed with anything you get there. And then coffee wise. Stay Golden Coffee. They're an amazing coffee shop in, actually both of those restaurants, the restaurant and coffee shop I just mentioned are in Berry Hill neighborhood. And, if you're ever here, go to one of those places or invite me to tag along and I'll buy your coffee.
Nice. What's a recent movie or TV show that you've watched? And they could be family with your family or on your own.
Good question.
This is where we get to see like cartoons versus.
Yeah. Actually, this is a good one. So I don't watch a lot of movies or TV. I watched 2 movies in the theater last year and they both happened in the last week of the year. I didn't go to the theater for 11 months and 3 weeks. And then just so happened that we went. So I'm not a big movie or TV watcher. But I do, if you have kids, Archibald's Next Big Thing on Netflix is a great show. My friend Victor actually came up with the Archibald, the character. He and Tony Hale worked on, Tony Hale from Arrested Development and a bunch of, and Veep and all that. Victor and Tony Hale worked on this character years ago, Archibald, and it's this chicken. And they made an amazing show. Years later, Netflix made a show. They're on season two. It's fantastic. It's fun. It's entertaining. And then another show, which might not resonate with a ton of people, but it might, Hunters on Amazon Prime. Recent podcast guest, Josh Radner, who kind of became famous through his lead role in How I Met Your Mother. He has a new show with Al Pacino and others on Amazon Prime called Hunters. It's a really interesting twist and premise. And again, some people are going to hate it. Some people are going to like it. I enjoyed it.
So what's a favorite quote? It can be a personal one or something from someone else, but what's a personal quote that inspires you?
Yeah, great question. Rabbi Harold Kushner has one of my favorite quotes. He says, "Our souls are not hungry for fame, comfort, wealth, or power. Our souls are hungry for meaning, for the sense that we have lived so that our lives matter." And so that's one that's really informed what I focus on, what I do.
You know, obviously on your end, you're still very, very young. You're creating your legacy every day, but many, many years from now, what do you hope that people say about you, your efforts? Let's give a damn. What do you hope your legacy is?
I hope my legacy is that I loved my family really well, my wife and kids, that I loved my neighbor really well. And my neighbor is not just the people around me, which I try to do. We try to do as a family. It's every person I come in contact with. And that I owned up to my mistakes. And that I did everything that I could to help as many people as I can while still taking care of my own health, my own sanity, right? I don't want to burn out and not be useful for a good chunk of my life because I tried too hard in the short term. Really realizing that life is a marathon. It is not a sprint. I want to be around till, if Elon Musk can figure things out for us, I want to be around till 130, 140, you know, like I'll take whatever they give me. I love life. I love doing this thing called life, but I don't want to burn out too soon. And so doing all those things that I just mentioned, love my family, love my neighbor, do as many things as I can to help other people out in a very paced way, which I'm not naturally good at. I want to like go in there and do everything right away. So just learning how to like slow that down and pace things out.
Well, last question is always the easiest is where do all the listeners, the viewers go to learn more, to follow you, to follow Let's Give a Damn? Where do we go?
Let'sgiveadamn.com and then at Let's Give a Damn for all social media. And I'm the only one using this. When I first started this thing, I thought more people would be, you know, I didn't know if I'd be able to get the domain and all that. But if you type in Let's Give a Damn online, it's all my stuff, thankfully. So I don't have to pay for any advertising. It's all there. And then nicklapara.com and at nicklapara everywhere on social media. So that's where you can find most things. We have newsletters that go out every week. You can find those on the respective websites. And I'm available for anything that you all need at hello@nicklapara.com. I definitely want to help. If I can do it, I will do it. If I can't, I will say that I can't. I will not lead you on. Yeah, there you go.
Well, Nick, you are a change maker. Greatly appreciate everything you're doing with Let's Give a Damn, all of your personal efforts, your family efforts. Thank you for all you do and for coming on the podcast. We appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to the Change Makers podcast, produced by City Current and brought to you by Lipscomb and Pitts Insurance. To learn more about our guests and share your stories of others leading by example, visit us online at citycurrent.com or follow us on social media using @citycurrent. Please make sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast wherever you listen. Now, think big, start small, and act now. Be a change maker.